I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. We were very, very close, actually, extremely close to getting a deal. That sounds pretty close. And that's how U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry described the three-day marathon talks between world powers and Iran in Geneva last weekend. But in the end, there was no deal. So where does that leave the talks at this point? We have Barbara Slavin, author and senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, to help us figure this one out. Barbara, we're seeing a lot of messages and signals from all sides. How close do you think they were in getting to a deal?
I think they were very close. You know, John Kerry himself has said that they came in with a text that had brackets in it, which suggests that they were already very close when they got to Geneva last week. But there are a couple of sticking points, and there's an issue of alliance management that has come up, which is quite fascinating. It almost seems as though the U.S. and Iran were on the same page, but the French were not.
Right. So, I mean, if you look at the spin from the talks in Geneva, a lot of it seems to be about, was it Iran who didn't sign, or did France balk at the last minute? Can you unpack that for us? What's that about?
Yeah, it was both, actually. The French decided that they were going to make a big issue of something called the ARAK, that's A-R-A-K, heavy water reactor. This is a project that the Iranians have had that has been going rather slowly. It's not even clear that they can complete it this year, but there are major proliferation concerns. Once it goes online and has radioactive material introduced, you cannot bomb it without spewing radioactive material all over the place. So the French came in and said, well, the Iranians have to promise to stop working on this facility right now. And this was something that the Iranians were not willing to do.
Now, you also mentioned alliance management. There are players in these talks who are not actually at the table but seem to have a lot of influence. I'm thinking of Israel and Saudi Arabia and conservative voices in Iran and the U.S. How much can these people not at the table actually sway these talks?
Well, I actually think that the talks have gone so far that it will be difficult for the Israelis, the Saudis, and others to really change the substance of these talks. The decisions now have to be made by those at the table, namely the five permanent members of the UN Security Council plus Germany and the Iranians.
So you've been watching Iran negotiate with the West for a long time, Barbara. The kind of why did this deal fall apart at the last minute, is that kind of important anyway right now? Or do you think it's kind of part and parcel of a relationship where parties have not really spoken in 35 years?
I think we should focus on the positive here. John Kerry said that, I think he said something, he'd spoken something like 30 hours to Iranians, and that was more than we'd spoken to them in 30 years. I mean, that's a little bit of an exaggeration. We actually did have direct talks with Iranians after 9/11 that went on for some time, but they were semi-secret, and they were not something that was sort of in the spotlight of the international community or the international press like these were. But there's been real progress. These kinds of contacts now between our Secretary of State and the Iranian Foreign Minister are becoming almost routine. And we had candid shots of Wendy Sherman, the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, chatting in the hallway with her Iranian counterpart quite casually. It was really almost, you know, you had to pinch yourself a little bit.
Barbara, what's next with these talks? And are you still optimistic about them?
Yeah, I am still optimistic. There's another round November the 20th. There's time for everyone to go back and try to get agreement on these key issues, the question of right to enrich, the question of the ARAK facility, and come back hopefully with fewer things in brackets, fewer things to finally resolve. I'm sure there are back-channel discussions. The various parties can talk to each other without actually waiting to convene in Geneva. My only concern is really the U.S. Congress right now, because there is yet more sanctions legislation that certain folks in the Senate are trying to attach to some vehicle. They know that sanctions alone probably won't work because the Democratic leadership has listened to the Obama administration and they're not going to allow a standalone bill. If that legislation passes, it will send a very negative signal to the Iranians and it could require them to act a little tougher, refuse certain concessions just to show that they're not knuckling under to pressure.
Yeah, we'll be watching that. Barbara Slavin, author and senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
No agreement yet, which means that for now, we can assume Iran will continue to enrich uranium, and the U.S. won't change its economic sanctions. Those sanctions are aimed at Iran's government. They also make it really hard for ordinary citizens to do business with the outside world. For one thing, the sanctions don't allow major credit card companies to process Iranian transactions. One family-owned business, though, has come up with a workaround. It started accepting the virtual currency bitcoins. That's Morteza Rokhani. He and his brothers run a 70-year-old leather business in Isfahan that sells handmade shoes and handbags. He says a cousin of his in Australia suggested the Bitcoin idea and helped them get started. It's only been a few weeks, but Rokhani says the company's international business is already picking up. Rokhani says the brothers have gotten orders from Finland, the U.S., and Hong Kong. Now, those bitcoins still have to be exchanged for hard currency, so Rokhani's leather business can purchase supplies. That means dealing with, again, banks. So for Iranians, the system is not foolproof. But Rokhani says he and his family have to try. Rokhani says just getting the leather and glue they need to work has been challenging and expensive. He's hopeful things will get better soon. And he says he's encouraged by Iran's new president, Hassan Rouhani, and the promise of more nuclear talks. Maybe, just maybe, he says, the business that he took over from his father 15 years ago will make it through these tough times.